It is Thursday, August 18th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Coming up, Donald Trump shakes up his campaign staff.
The last few days, Trump has been more disciplined in his speeches. What the future holds now with these appointments, not sure.
Russian warplanes take off again from a base in Iran. Turkey releases prisoners to make room for those arrested in a failed coup attempt. Wildfires ravage California. And we'll visit an icon of this year's Olympics in Rio de Janeiro. That's all on today's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump again shook up the leadership of his campaign Wednesday, less than 3 months before Americans choose who will take over the White House in January. Trump hired Stephen Bannon, a senior executive at the conservative news website Breitbart, to be campaign chief executive officer. He also promoted pollster Kellyanne Conway to campaign manager. Trump's campaign said Bannon's position will involve oversight of staff and major campaign initiatives, while Conway will focus on messaging and frequently travel with the candidate. But does that mean there will be any change in Donald Trump's style? Well, for some insight, I spoke to VOA's senior political correspondent Jim Malone about the shakeup and whether it means Trump plans to change his methods.
Yes, Stephen Bannon, don't know a lot about him, but we know that Breitbart is somewhat provocative at times and definitely in the Trump camp. They've been promoting his candidacy, and they kind of like to mix it up. They're aggressive. They're not afraid to hang back. The other addition he's making, or elevation, is Kellyanne Conway. I've known her for quite a long time. She's a respected Republican pollster and strategist. So on one hand, it looks like, is he trying to be more provocative? On the other, is it the two faces of Donald Trump trying to be more disciplined, like many Republicans want, so he avoids the gaffes we've been seeing? I think it's too early to know. The last few days, Trump has been more disciplined in his speeches. What the future holds now with these appointments, not sure.
Now, Donald Trump is known for his, shall we say, shooting from the hip when he gives a speech. He's not afraid to say controversial things. Do you think that that's going to increase with the addition of Mr. Bannon, or do you think that that's going to be more tempered? Because it could go either way.
Well, you know, Trump was asked by a Milwaukee TV station if he's going to make some sort of pivot, be more moderate, be more rational, kind of get away from the outrageous and the sort of, in-your-face rhetoric we've seen during the primaries. He was very direct. He said, no, absolutely not. I'm not going to make any kind of pivot. You can't change what you are. I am what I am. And we've seen this apparent struggle in Trump for months now. He'll go a couple of days by trying to adhere to a more disciplined approach, read from a teleprompter, but then inevitably within a few days he's back to off-the-cuff Donald Trump, speaking off the top of his head and oftentimes in directions that no one can foresee, and it sometimes gets him into trouble.
Now, what about former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton? She has been spending a lot of time in what are called battleground states like Ohio and Pennsylvania, reaching out to people in what used to be known as the Rust Belt, where a lot of iron manufacturing was done. She has pretty much stayed on message, right? I mean, she hasn't said too much that's controversial.
Yeah, speaking of disciplined candidates, Hillary Clinton may be the model for that. And, you know, I've got a story this week out that looks at what I think is a key evaluation for voters to make. Do you want change? And are you willing to take the risk that Donald Trump represents in bringing that change? Or are you okay with stability? And do you adhere to the Clinton view that Trump doesn't have the right temperament to be president? It's almost this stark choice of change versus temperament. And for a while now, the Clinton campaign has tried to make this a key choice, and they may be succeeding according to the polls, because in those polls, not only is Clinton leading nationally and in key states, but on the question of temperament, she has a huge lead on Trump right now. About 6 in 10 believe Clinton does have the right temperament, and less than 3 in 10 believe that Trump does. So she's winning that argument. Now, the trustworthiness, the credibility argument, that goes against Hillary Clinton. But right now, it looks like that temperament, is he fit to be president argument, seems to be carrying more water.
That is VOA senior political correspondent Jim Malone. Hillary Clinton, meanwhile, said Wednesday that Donald Trump's decision to shake up his campaign will have little impact on his controversial political message. She said there is no new Donald Trump.
And I think it's fair to say that Donald Trump has shown us who he is. He can hire and fire anybody he wants from his campaign. They can make him read new words from a teleprompter. But he is still the same man who insults Gold Star families, demeans women, mocks people with disabilities, and thinks he knows more about ISIS than our generals.
Clinton told supporters at a rally in Cleveland, Ohio, that they should persuade their friends and families not to vote for the Republican candidate.
I hope you will talk to any of your friends who are flirting with the idea of voting for Donald Trump. Friends don't let friends vote for Trump.
Mrs. Clinton is campaigning and fundraising in Ohio, a key battleground state. You can follow all of our coverage of campaign 2016 right through the November 8th vote on our website, voanews.com. Time now for our social media segment. As always, our own G. Abby Lee joins me in the studio with the trending stories online. Hello, G.
Hi, Dave. The latest video from the Clinton campaign featuring Russian-American ballet dancer Mikhail Baryshnikov is trending. And you can find the clip used at Humanity for HRC, that's 4 being the Arabic number, or using the hashtag #ITrustHer.
Okay.
In the clip, he says, I'm hearing rhetoric that reminds me of the Soviet Union of my youth, where it was a crime and continues to be a crime to be different. He defected back in the 1970s, first to Canada and later to the United States. If you've seen the movie...
White Nights.
That's true. And
yes.
Also Turning Point. He's in there. So
White
he's
Nights.
A very influential person to talk about political issues, because people who don't follow politics will also listen.
Okay.
Moving on to another, a little bit of a political issue here. NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden tweeted, he thinks Russia is behind the leak of alleged National Security Agency malware. He tweeted, this leak is likely a warning that someone can prove U.S. responsibility for any attacks that originated from this malware server. There's something else trending.
Okay, what is it?
McDonald's says it will include a fitness tracker with Happy Meal purchase and limited offer.
Oh, wait a minute. McDonald's restaurants.
That's true.
Home of the quarter pounder with cheese.
You know, that's not exactly a clean eating kind of meal.
You will have to walk 22.7 kilometers to work off this cheeseburger. No.
Didn't know that.
No, I'm not. I don't know that. That's not
true.
Accurate.
Okay.
That's just me being funny.
Well, the tracker is called StepIt, and it comes in 6 different colors, and hashtag StepIt is trending on Twitter at this hour, with mothers posting photos and reviews of that tracker. And of course, it's not as sophisticated as the ones that you have to pay $300 for.
Right.
But it is free, and it's for kids.
Okay.
And well, so far.
All right. Well, thank you for the wrap-up, G. You can tweet us your comments and questions at @VOA_IE. You can also find G on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. Among the top stories in Asia, South Korea says a senior North Korean diplomat based in London defected to South Korea, becoming one of the highest northern officials to do so. The UN human rights chief appealed to India and Pakistan to grant his office access to Kashmir amid grave concerns over alleged rights violations. Thai police say they are making major progress in tracking down the perpetrators of last week's bombings at tourist destinations that killed 4 people. Myanmar's de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi leaves for a high-profile trip to China. And a judge orders U.S. swimmers who said they were robbed at gunpoint not to leave Brazil. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website and our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. You're listening to VOA. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Russian warplanes flew from Iran to carry out airstrikes in Syria for a second day Wednesday. The Russian Defense Ministry said the strikes originating from Hamadan Air Base targeted Islamic State militants. The first round of airstrikes Tuesday were aimed at Islamic State, as well as the jihadist group Jabhat Fateh al-Sham, formerly known as al-Nusra. Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov rejected a U.S. State Department spokesman's assertion that the flights could amount to a violation of a U.N. Security Council resolution that banned the sale or transfer of combat aircraft to Iran. He said, in the case that we are discussing now, there has been no supply, sale, or transfer of combat jets to Iran. These jets are being used by Russian air forces with Iranian consent within anti-terrorist operations in Syria on the request of the legal Syrian government that Iran also cooperates with. The Speaker of Iran's parliament, meanwhile, stressed Wednesday that Iran has not given Russia a permanent base in its territory. Here in Washington, State Department spokesman Mark Toner said the air raids are complicating an already chaotic situation in Syria.
Everyone who has signed up to the ISSG has at least claimed to support a political solution and a peaceful solution to the conflict in Syria. Now, many of the countries who sit on the ISSG have their own motives and their own positions on the way to get there, but that's part of what we're trying to do here through diplomacy is reach consensus.
Russia has been conducting airstrikes in support of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's government since September of last year. But until this week, the flights have originated from either Syria or Russia itself. Turkey is set to release 38,000 prisoners in an apparent move to make space for thousands of people arrested as part of an investigation into last month's failed coup. As Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul, more dismissals and arrests are taking place despite calls for proportionality from Ankara's Western allies.
In a tweet Wednesday, Justice Minister Beki Bozdar announced the release of the prisoners sanctioned by a government decree under the current emergency rule. No reason was given for the early release, but in a statement, an official said only non-violent prisoners would be freed and they would remain under supervision. Nearly 20,000 people have been arrested since last month's coup attempt. Human rights groups in Turkey have claimed the prisons are so overcrowded that detainees are being forced to sleep in shifts. Turkey researcher Andrew Gardner of the London-based Amnesty International said even before the latest detentions, Turkey was facing chronic prison overcrowding.
The concerns that we've had regarding prisons, especially recently following the huge number of detentions following the coup attempt, is overcrowding in prisons. So, I mean, from that perspective, it's possible that the large number of releases will help this situation.
But observers say the mass release of prisoners is a sign that there will be no let-up in the ongoing crackdown. The government has vowed to root out all those who supported the failed military takeover. More than 240 people died resisting the coup. Amnesty International's Gardner says there are also concerns about the treatment of those being detained.
Especially in the first week after the failed coup attempt, there were very serious allegations of ill treatment in places of detention. Now there are concerning reports of arbitrary practices in prisons, including some accounts of ill treatment in prisons, which are very concerning. But also, we've heard reports of people being beaten during transfer from courthouse to prison. We've heard cases of people being beaten during transfer from one prison to another.
Bozdar has dismissed allegations of mistreatment, but opposition parties are voicing concern for the rule of law to be respected, a call echoed by Turkey's Western allies. There are also concerns over the growing numbers of detentions and the more than 70,000 dismissals of people working for the Turkish state. This week, nearly 300 people working in Istanbul's law courts were detained and arrest warrants issued for scores of businessmen. The head of international relations for the Turkish presidency, Ayşe Sözen Uslu, says due process will be observed.
This is just a precaution taken in Turkey. This doesn't mean that everybody will be in the judiciary process or they will be sentenced. Or they can even go back to your work.
The government warns the ongoing crackdown will continue. And with room in prisons being created for 40,000 more people, more arrests are expected. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
Here in the United States, the wrath of the weather has been on full display in two different states. California's newest huge wildfire advanced on thousands of homes Wednesday, feeding on drought-stricken vegetation and destroying an untold number of structures as it expanded to more than 12,000 hectares. San Bernardino County Fire Chief Mark Hartwig said that many families have lost everything.
There'll be a lot of families that come home to nothing. If there's a bright side, a silver lining, there are some homes that were saved. The hard, brave work of men and women, firefighters, yesterday put themselves in harm's way to evacuate and to protect structures. And because of that and the diligent work of homeowners before the fire, some structures were saved.
No deaths were reported, but cadaver dogs were used to search ruins to look for anyone who was overrun by the flames. The blaze, 96 kilometers east of Los Angeles, was among eight large wildfires being battled by 10,000 firefighters statewide. Meanwhile, in the southern state of Louisiana, the death count rose to 11 Wednesday as the state's capital continued to reel from unprecedented flooding. 40,000 homes have been damaged following a weekend of record-breaking rainfall in Baton Rouge. Craig Cooper of the Red Cross told VOA that many areas have not faced this kind of rainfall for decades.
This was a massive rain incident, and what we've learned is that in many, many areas, these were communities that have either never been flooded or they have to remember back 30-plus years to the type of flooding that they've experienced. And the rain landed in places where there was just no ability for it to drain away.
Residents in 20 parishes are eligible for disaster assistance as a result of a federal declaration. The Federal Emergency Management Agency says more than 70,000 people have registered for individual assistance and more than 9,000 have filed flood insurance claims. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. Coming up, we'll visit one of the icons of Rio de Janeiro. This is VOA News.
Do you know the political process that determines who the next president of the United States will be? Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the campaigns, the voting, and the final tallying to find out how citizens choose their next president. Right here on VOA.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. If you've been watching the Rio Olympics, you've seen the giant Christ the Redeemer statue that sits atop a mountain overlooking the city. Many Olympic visitors to Rio, including athletes, officials, and their families, are in the stunningly beautiful coastal city for the first time in their lives. As VOA's Park Brewer tells us, if there's spare time for sightseeing, a trip to see the iconic statue that overlooks the former Brazilian capital is high on the list of many.
The Art Deco statue, made of reinforced concrete and soapstone, has overlooked Rio now for 85 years. Jacqueline de Mello, daughter of the owners of the management company which oversees the site, told VOA the crowds are especially large on Saturdays and Sundays.
I know for every day it's media of 3,000, 4,000 each day. In high season and low season it's 2,000 and a half.
Christ the Redeemer is located about 20 minutes from Rio's famous Copacabana Beach. A popular way to reach the top is by tram, which costs about $21. Once there, DeMelo says, the experience is priceless.
Because we can see the whole city 360 degrees, and now since 07 it was the seventh wonder world, so everybody wants to come here to see.
The tram going to the top is far older than the monument. The first one went into service in 1884. It negotiates 700 vertical meters to the peak of Corcovado Mountain, where the gigantic statue is perched. The tram ride is an adventure itself. Upon arrival, you have to climb several flights of steps. Then finally, the imposing architectural work appears.
Es muy hermoso. Es una de las maravillas del mundo. Es muy, muy bonita.
He said it's very beautiful. It's one of the wonders of the world. It is very nice. Laura Machuca is from the United States.
It's so pretty, and there's like lots of things to visit, and like the view is really pretty, so.
Christ the Redeemer is 30 meters high, not including its 8-meter pedestal. Its arms stretch 28 meters across. At the top, you can see virtually all of Rio de Janeiro, the famed Maracanã Stadium, Ipanema Beach, and downtown. But it's the majesty of the statue, designed by Polish-French sculptor Paul Landowski, that enthralls visitors, like Juan Diego Calcaterra of Argentina.
La verdad, una belleza. Es impresionante. Teníamos mucha ansiedad por conocerlos y bueno, agradecido de tener la oportunidad de estar acá.
He said, it's a beauty. It's impressive. We were very anxious to see it, and we are grateful to be here. And of course, no one leaves the iconic site without taking photos and videos, proof that they were there. Park Brewer, VOA News, at the Rio Olympics.
Been to that statue myself. Had to wait for the fog to clear to see it. You've been listening to International Edition. Tracy Carter directed our program. Carl Starling was our engineer. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Enjoy your day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Human rights monitors and the international community have expressed concern at the recent sentencing of Chinese human rights defenders, whose professional activities were labeled by the government as subversion of state power. In July 2015, over 300 human rights lawyers and activists were arrested, interrogated, and detained in a nationwide campaign against the legal community. 1 year later, more than 20 were still in custody. Recently, several of them, including attorney Wang Yu, appeared on video or in televised trials renouncing their past activities and confessing to being influenced by so-called foreign forces. Chinese authorities announced that Ms. Wang and her husband and fellow attorney Bao Longjun were released by authorities on bail, although questions remain concerning their whereabouts. In early August, four of the rights defenders were convicted by a court in the northern Chinese city of Tianjin and given sentences ranging from a 3-year suspended sentence to 7.5 years in prison. The four include attorney Zhu Shifeng, director of the Beijing Fengrui Law Firm, which was known for defending dissidents and religious minorities, Zhu's associate Zai Yanmin, and rights activists Hu Zhigen and Gu Hongguo, who were associated with Christian house churches in China. Human Rights Watch called the confessions of the four men coerced and their trials a miscarriage of justice. Amnesty International said this wave of trials against lawyers and activists are a political charade. The Chinese authorities appear intent on silencing anyone who raises legitimate questions about human rights and uses the legal system to seek redress. Director of the U.S. State Department's Office of Press Relations, Elizabeth Trudeau, issued a statement calling the charge of subversion of state power against the four rights defenders apparently politically motivated. She noted that more than a dozen other attorneys and activists detained on or around July 9, 2015, including Li Heping, remain in pretrial detention without access to their families or to legal counsel of their own choosing. The Chinese government's campaign against lawyers and rights activists undermines China's development of a judicial system that respects the rule of law, Ms. Trudeau said. We urge Chinese authorities to release the lawyers and rights defenders who are imprisoned or in detention, including those already sentenced. We call for an immediate end to the cases brought against them and to restrictions on their freedom of movement and professional activities.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.